So who can tell me what performance is? Not me, I'm not answering. I'm asking you guys. Good morning. Who can tell me what performance is, especially for a mobile device? I'm not interested in like supercomputers. Yes? Okay, so it's a measure of, I guess, how I'm utilizing, how resources are available for me. Okay, you know what, I'm actually going to write these down. PowerPoint. All right. So, what did we say? We said resources. So, resource usage. Anything else? Yes. User experience. I like that one. Well, I like all of them, but we will talk about that one. Yes. Battery life. We'll talk about that one as well. Yes. Ooh. I think I can just walk out of the door now. I don't even know if that's spelled right. Yes? Computational effort. I'm going to add that under resource usage. Enter. You can add in GPU here as well. Anyone else? Cool, mobile device. I have my phone. Beautiful Windows Phone 7 device. 7.5, actually. What's important when I talk about performance for this? Anything else? Screen frames per second, maybe? Smoothness, stuff like that, FPS. The original tagline, actually, is a bit of trivia. The original tagline for PDC 2 years ago. So I gave this talk for the first time 2 years ago at PDC, same place, same venue. Well, Redmond as a venue. And the term was buttery smooth. And at the time, I hated that device. I could not bring myself to say it in front of people. But now that everybody's using it, I'm like, hey, they're stealing our term. I'm like, no, buttery smooth is okay. Has anybody actually tried to cut real butter? It's really hard. It's not smooth at all, trust me. I was actually going to bring a plate, and then I figured that'd probably melt and burn away. All right, so what I'm going to talk to you guys about is actually how I see performance on a mobile phone. Now, if I could, I'd probably put up a picture of a magician, but at the end of the day, the two really big things, and ignore these photos, that's my eye and my finger, and taking photos of yourself in the middle of the night with an SLR is not great. It's about two things. It's about feeling. So one of the problems people say with these kinds of devices where you just have this glass and you have a finger and you touch the glass is that no matter where you're going, you feel exactly the same. There's no tactile feedback. I challenge that because I guarantee you that if you have a button on screen and you tap that button and that button doesn't react immediately, you feel that. Why do you feel that? You feel that because your eye sees what's happening on the screen as soon as your finger hits the screen. So if my finger touches the screen, right? I'm sorry. I have a wolf vision. Why am I doing this there? All right. So if my finger comes down on the screen and nothing happens, I can feel that something is wrong. If it's stalling, I can feel that something is wrong because I'm looking at it. If I'm not looking, yeah, that's right. There's no tactile feedback. And it would be nice if there was real tactile feedback, and you guys have all seen the cool prototypes, you know, things from Nokia, things from other people. But at the end of the day, when I tap a tile, right, when I tap and I see that immediate bang launch, I feel that it's running fast. Did it really run fast? I don't care. Did it take 1 second to load? Did it take 1.5 seconds to load? I don't care. I felt that it was reacting to my finger. And that is what performance is about. That's what you need to think about. For the rest of the talk, we're going to be talking about the metrics that define how we get to those. And that's the great thing that we just went through. That's the exercise that we just went through, like getting like this kind of list of things up on the board. All of these are absolutely correct, and all of these are things that you need to think about when you think about how to implement performance, how to make that snappiness. But at the end of the day, the user needs to know one thing. When I tap on your app, when I interact with your app, let's make it more generic, when I interact with your app, it is responsive. Now, the obvious question is, why? Who cares, right? Does the app do what it wants? Functional. It's functional, right? It's awesome. It is the best app on the marketplace. It provides every feature any user could ever want, and even the ones they haven't thought about yet. It is so good that when the user says, wow, I wish it had this feature, it somehow heard what the user said and pops up a message was going, hey, did you know we've got this feature? Go check it out. So why do I care about performance? I'll tell you why you care about performance. I have an app on the marketplace. There are two other apps that exist that do exactly the same thing. My app provides no extra functionality. It's a true story. No extra functionality at all. Why did I write the app? Because when I started using these other two, they were really slow. And it really annoyed me. Not because I'm a performance person, but because at the end of the day, I would give my phone to my wife, or my wife would use it on her phone. And she would say, this is really slow. Especially when comparing to her old phones, and you can probably guess which one that was. All I spent was 2 or 3 days rewriting it. And my code is not the cleanest, right? It's not the code that I get production into the phone, I promise you, right? I promise you that I spend more time when it's actually like shipping stuff. Within 3 months, my app is number one in the marketplace for that category. Because all of the reviews, if you look through them, and I don't bring them up because I don't want people to go looking for what my apps are and stuff like that, but it's all like, so fast, bang. It sets you apart. Because everybody at the end of the day can write the same apps. Everyone can put in the same functionality. But it's the people that go the extra miles, the people that have that beautiful design, and the people that have that beautiful, sleek responsiveness, the feeling that the app is reacting to what you want immediately, straight away. Those are the people that get ahead. And those are you. It's every single person sitting here in this room and everyone that's joining us, well, I guess it's not live, but everyone that's joining us on the recording in the future. So who are you? Well, you know who you are, but I don't. So I'm setting my expectations here. Ideally, you'll know a bit about how to program already. If you don't, you probably shouldn't be a build. Sorry, no offense. You'll know a bit about developing on the phone, at least developing on Windows. You'll know a little bit of .NET, a little bit of managed, a little bit of native code. But at the end of the day, you only need really one thing. You need passion to write really good apps that are really responsive. I'm not going to give you any magic formulas here. At the end of the day, what we're going to get here are tidbits, the little breadcrumbs. And you're going to find the breadcrumb that's yours, the one that you know is interesting to you, and you're going to start following that trail. And the rest of the investigation, you take off by yourself. I point you in the right direction, and you guys can send me emails, and I can continue pointing you after the session. But in general, point you in the right direction. You find the things that you say, oh, yeah, that's good for my app. Oh, that's great for my app. Oh, I don't care about that. And you follow those ones, and you run with that. Well, we ran through this slide already as well. My name is Oren Nachman. I'll bring that back up just in case. So my name is Oren Nachman. I'm from the Windows Phone Performance team. We're part of the developer platform team, which is part of the greater Windows Phone. We own everything from anything and everything that can affect the end developer. So we own the power states on the CPU, if that's what affects the developer, up through the threading model, up through the different the hosting model, up through the APIs you interact with, up through the multiple layers of APIs, the controls, and at the end of the day, whatever hits the screen. So this is stuff we're going to run through. So Perfinu, we've done already. We're going to run through a very quick overview of where we came from. So what we've had previously, so that would be this device. We're going to run through where we're going. So that's this device, which you guys all should have by now. We're going to run through how you can get to where you're supposed to be going. So basically kind of perf tidbits. And then we're going to talk about going the extra mile with some profiling, which is essentially a way for you guys to diagnose your own performance issues. So what we're first going to talk about is what we've been working on hard. This is actually the performance team. My lead got married. Yeah, we do work as well, I promise. So here's the stuff that's kind of used to keep you up at night. If you guys were developing for previous versions of Windows Phone, this is stuff that would keep you up at night, kind of finding those little tips and tricks, those hoops that you needed to kind of jump through to get performance good. And here are the things you really don't need to worry about as much anymore. So the number one thing is startup. So actually, I'm gonna move back to the Wolf Vision here. Now, this is a relatively high-end Nokia device, the Mango one. You will see varying degrees of differences, so it's not indicative. I'm not trying to like play off two devices. This happens to be the device that I have. Anybody wants to come up and compare their old Windows Phone 7 device with the new Apollo one can come up afterwards. But I'm going to run through like a couple of the apps that I like using. We're going to notice that we're not going to work around with data. Data here is interesting, the Wi-Fi differences in speeds and things. But for example, I play chess a lot. This one hasn't got notifications for some reason, but I have two moves waiting. So I'm going to open the chess app, and I'm going to give this one an advantage. Bang. Same app. Not updated for Apollo. Windows Phone 8, I'm sorry. Oh, I lost the game. Don't look. Thank you. There we go. I love spontaneous clapping, so feel free anytime during the session to keep me up on that. absolutely not updated. You have to do absolutely nothing to take advantage of this. We completely rewrote our startup path. So a lot of the code is the same, but it's completely re-architected. We take advantage of multiple cores, which we didn't have before. We've eliminated a lot of waits, a lot of stops, a lot of things. Basically, a lot of the code that brought up before we hit your code, we've improved. And then there's improvements such as NGen, which basically takes your managed code and compiles it down into as close as possible to the assembly code that you can get. So previously, we had JIT, just-in-time compilation. Basically, your app would come up. It would be IL, and we would compile it as you ran it. So previously, we had very fast JIT that generated inefficient code. Now that we've moved to the same CLR as big Windows, we now have very slow JIT that generates very, very good code. So to offset the cost of the very slow JIT, we actually take your NGen code, we compile it in the cloud for you, so the first step is in the marketplace, the second step is during installation time, and then you get this incredibly fast startup, you get code that is like 1% slower than JIT, so it's a little bit slower, but that's what I'm talking about, the magician's trick, no one knows that. At the end of the day, it is incredibly fast to start up. And you can see that everywhere, right? I mean, little apps are not really as affected as much. So just to show you, like, someone introduced me to this app yesterday. That's pretty cool, actually, if you're into alarm clocks. So where are we? So TikTok. This one I won't give anybody any advantages. It's pretty much the same for the small ones. Still a little bit of advantage there. But for example, let's take a really heavy app. So, I watch Netflix enough that I actually have it pinned to my startup. And what you notice here is, do you see how fast it is? It started up now. The other one's still gone. And that's what I'm talking about. All right. Enough patting myself on the back there. Ooh, next. Splash screen. Splash screen is now presented by the actual system, which means, hey, everyone turn around, say hello to the perf lead, Shane. Hi, Shane. Woo. All right, there you go. Sorry about that. Everyone look at the guy who came in late. Splash screen is now presented immediately by the operating system. So there's no, like, doesn't matter how big your assemblies are, doesn't matter how your app is built, splash screen comes up immediately. Again, you do get that for free. Fill rate. If you don't know what that is, ignore the rest of the sentence or go look at my previous perf talks, but essentially fill rate is a measure of how many pixels you're pushing to the screen each frame. So a fill rate of 1 means it's a full screen width. 2 screens width. 3, etc. Previously with Mango, we could get up with Windows Phone 7, we could get up to like 3.5-ish, and the GPU would start slowing down, right? Because there's a limit to how many pixels the GPU can push every frame. With Windows Phone 8 and the new chips, we can now get up to 7, 8, depending on what you're pushing. So it's way less of a problem. I have never seen anyone push that many pixels. So something that you most likely will not have to worry about. Panorama and pivot jerkiness. We'll go back to this one. List box blanking. We have done a lot of work to get list box to reduce blanking. Now, we can't stop blanking altogether. We can't protect you from yourselves completely, but we can try a little bit. We can help out. We can make it so it's not as easy, and we'll see what that looks like a bit later on as well. Progress bar. You do not know how long I've waited to say this. You can now use the built-in progress bar. Woo! Oh, yeah. I always felt really embarrassed standing up saying, hey, don't use the built-in progress bar, download the one from the toolkit. We've now solved all those problems. It's now built in. It's part of the actual Microsoft Phone Controls DLL that comes with the phone. You can use it. You don't have to worry about it. The new Windows Phone 8 toolkit, WP8.WindowsPhone.Codeplex, whatever it is, doesn't even have one in there. Go forth and rejoice. So that was the thing that used to keep you up at night. This is what keeps me up at night right now. I will get back to my job, though. So these are the things that will now keep you up at night, but not because you're like, oh, this is really bad, how do I work on these performance issues, but rather the other way around. You're going to be looking at these things and you're going to say, hey, this is really cool, I'm going to stay up tonight and rewrite my app, or I'm going to add my app, or I'm going to adapt my app to use these things. Number one is the long list selector. So if you guys have not heard of this, I think it's been mentioned in nearly every XAML session until now, the new list box control is the long list selector. It is not exactly the same one as the old toolkit, for those who are familiar with it. But it completely replaces the list box. List box is still there. There are some very specific cases where you might still want to use it. But in general, we recommend that everyone move their list boxes over to the long list selector. It is like a one-word change in your code for most people. It is way more lightweight. It is built from the ground up. And it can work around a lot of the limitations that list box had because of assumptions that list box made about being on a desktop and et cetera, et cetera. And we'll see that a bit later on. Multi-core. So previously, I would always say, you know, you want to be really cautious with spinning up background threads that are long-lived because we have one core and they have fixed time quantums for every thread, et cetera, et cetera. We now have two cores. Now, I'm not saying go party on it, but now you have a lot more sort of freedom, especially, for example, if you're running a game. It's a lot more freedom to have like a background compilation thread, for example, doing AI than there used to be. Something to think about, something to experiment with. Image decode to size. So we're not actually going to see this exactly in code, but essentially we have two new parameters that can be added to a bitmap image. Decode width and decode height. Decode pixel width, decode pixel height. Essentially we can say, hey, I'm taking this massive image, but I only really want it to be this size, so only decode it to that size. Now it has a drawback. That means that if you decode it to that size and then you blow up that image, it's going to be pixelated, because it doesn't have the original pixels anymore, but it's going to save you a ton of memory. Because we see that with a lot of these apps that use a lot of memory, when we look into it, we notice that it's like, for example, downloading a movie poster from the internet in HD resolution and displaying it in a 100 by 200 image box. So you're using a ton of memory, a ton of processing time, a ton of data. So we can't save the data because you write it on the back end, but we can definitely save you the memory, and we can definitely save you the future decode times for those images. Viewport control, this is definitely one of those breadcrumbs. So you guys have heard about off-thread input. That's what we use for Listbox in Windows Phone 7.5 to make it beautiful off-screen, off-thread scrolling, so that the scrolling happens no matter what you're doing on the UI thread. And we'll see that in a demo if that's not clear in a minute. So we've now made that very generic. We have this control called a viewport control. So if you want to implement your new awesome XAML control and you want to have it support off-thread input, go check out the viewport control. Pure native and hybrid. If you haven't heard about this one, then this must be the first session you've taken to build at all. So we have a pure native project where it's 100% C++, no .NET managed code in there at all. And we have the hybrid slash mixed mode model, whatever you want to call it, where you have a XAML app and then you can link out to a native DLL. And the native DLL can either be something that draws DirectX, for example, that's what most of the samples show, or it can be, for example, you have this awesome library to do X that you've written already in native code and it runs on Windows, Linux, iOS, Android, blah, 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 and it'll now run on Windows Phone. All right. This is the fun part. Perf appetizers. So we're going to run through a bunch of little tidbits that are really important. Now, feel free to jump up with questions as we go through, especially if something is kind of not clear as we run through. Bit of terminology. So you already noticed that I kind of jump around between different words that happen all the time. So essentially, Silverlight, XAML, not the same as Windows 8 XAML, similar cores, not exactly kind of different, similar. That's what it is. Native, when I say native, I basically essentially mean a D3D app, right? Something that's using D3D, is pure D3D. Mixed mode hybrid is what I was saying before, XAML with the C++ inside it. Demo. I want to show you what it's like upgrading to a Windows Phone 8 project. Now, you've seen this already, but I want to show you what it's actually like when I upgrade a Windows Phone 8 project and things change. So, better get a device up and running. Thank you, Windows Phone 7 device. Don't need you anymore. So, for those of you who have seen some of my previous talks, I generally tend to use this app. It's a Reddit app. It's a very basic Reddit app. The source is on redditwp.codeplex.com. I use it for demos. It basically has performance issues. It's a full-featured app. Well, not full-featured, but it's a real app that pulls from a real data source, which means it's going to fail on the phone, of course, in the front of the demo. But it is essentially an app that you could see how it would get to the marketplace with a bit more extra development. And it has issues. It has problems. It has startup issues. It has a panorama jerkiness issue. Seriously, like as it starts pushing images and things into the app, it gets kind of slow. So let's take a look and see what that looks like. So I'm just going to deploy that from Visual Studio. I'm not running it on debugger. I'm just using Visual Studio to deploy. Oh, nice. You guys can't see my screen, which is excellent. So I have a rule, and it's basically whenever there's a Microsoft demo, something has to go wrong, or the demos are fake. It's just the way it is. Different USB port. Ooh, here we go. All right, deploy started. So here's my Reddit app, and you can see that some of the data is loaded. Looks all right. Ooh, I'm starting to load some images there. Do you get what I mean about the not responsive? I can feel that my finger, it actually kind of feels I'm sure some psychologists could like really delve deep into it, but now I can feel like my finger's actually kind of moving a surface. I can see my screen over there. But when it was stuck before, and we can see that again, when that was stuck, like my finger kind of drags. I mean, sure, it's not really dragging, but it just doesn't, like, it's jerking, it's not moving. Like, it's ignoring my inputs, it kind of gets stuck in the middle. So that's a 7.5 app, or a 7.1 if you're looking at the applet version, at the application platform version. Yeah. Now what I'm going to do is upgrade. Now, this is really the hardest demo. Like, I worked a lot on it. It's really hard to press that yes button. It kind of tends to run away from you. Oh, how about that? It's done already before I even got through my spiel. F6 just to rebuild. Someone just mentioned me on Twitter. Not looking at anyone specific in the front row. All right, we're deploying. Ooh, one thing to notice, actually, this is important, and I get hit by it all the time. When you upgrade the project, it resets your targets to the emulator. So you definitely want to go close that down and retarget to the device. I was once waiting 5 minutes for something to deploy, and then I realized that it opened up the emulator in the background and hadn't really understood what was going on. All right, we're going to do this deploying to the device. Deploying to the device. I have updates to Visual Studio. Deployment can be a little slow, but the really cool thing about deployment for Visual Studio, it's a little slow because it's doing a brand new refresh. Oh, here we go. I'll get back to my point. So now I have exactly the same code. I haven't changed any code. You saw me. The pictures are loading, but check it out. off-thread input. The UI thread is completely blocked while I'm pulling through, right? When those images come in, they're pretty big. I'm not doing any downscaling, and it is blocking the UI thread. Previously, and this is the whole input thread, off-thread input concept, is we take controls and we say, hey, this uses off-thread input, so the animations that follow your finger run on a separate thread while the UI thread is churning out, trying to get those images into the panorama. So no more jumping through hoops. You still need to worry about it. You still need to think about it. It still needs to be a little nugget in the back of your head, because if I was to try and, let's say, press a button while that was happening, sure, it's not going to react. So you still have to be a little smart, but you don't have to be as smart. So if you run through like some of my previous talks and you see all the tricks that I do, like I have a fake splash screen with a progress bar, which is awesome, and it's great and it works, but it doesn't match even this experience of bang, my panorama is here, bang, all my data is coming in, and bang, I can move it smoothly. And it just works. Actually, what I was going to say was it's really cool to see deployment from Visual Studio to device without any extras. There's no Zoom, there's no WP Connect. It just works. You plug your device in and everything just goes. I'm really liking what the team has done with that, actually. All right, demo number two. Listbox and LLS. So what we're going to see is a listbox. We're going to see it's a faked up template that's actually based off a template from a real app. It uses a control that's pretty heavy. It's called the ratings control, for those who are familiar with controls that are pretty heavy. And it has an image and a bit of text, and it uses the dreaded word that everyone always dreads is, let me just resize this. It uses variable size items. Oh, I would have loved if this was yesterday, actually, because you could do a whole Halloween theme around variable size items in a list box. So what we're going to run through here is I've got a very simple template. I'm defining it in the resources just to make it easy. I have my layout route. I kept this extremely easy so that you can see that I'm not like hiding anything. There are no tricks here in the background. I have a grid. I have my list box. You know, the design is up here. That's really all it is. If I look at the code in the background, let's get that a little bigger. So it's actually just the sample, the file new data bound app. It has a view model. The view model gets loaded. All I'm doing in the view model is just loading like a ton of random stuff in there. I have a bunch of images. I am very creative, so I took like lots of different images of the Windows Phone logo. And that's it. So let's see what that looks like on device. I will deploy that. I will move. And we're deploying. Oh, I have a new follower on Twitter, too. So here's my app. It doesn't look that great on the saturated screen, but essentially what I have is the image. It's in a border, white background. There's a little tiny Windows Phone logo there. I'm sorry it doesn't look really beautiful. The idea was more to have really simple code that just shows you like what I'm talking about and why. And then I can just flick. So you see the blanking there? It didn't look that bad. That was kind of a, that was an easy flick. And this is a high-powered device. I imagine that if I took some of, lots of push notifications. That's the problem with using your own device to demo. So if I took one of the, let's say, the lower-end devices, it might not have looked as nice as that. But if I really go through a flick, like I can get full screens in there. Like I don't know if you guys are seeing this, but if you're not, like we need to look at this again. Going up, going down, it's not the greatest. Now, it's not the greatest because even though the list box is super optimized, again, for Windows Phone 8, and it takes advantage of multiple cores to do its layout and its rasterization and all that sort of stuff, it's still too heavy for it. So let's see what happens when we actually upgrade this project to an LLS. Now, again, this is kind of a nugget. The LLS is a really, really full-featured list box. It has headers and footers and grouping and all sorts of other features, really cool functional features, and you should check out Sean Oster's talk from a couple of days ago if you want to see that. So what I'm actually going to do is I'm just going to duplicate that line so that we can come back to it if we need it, comment that out. I'll put in my long list selector. Anybody know what I forgot? I always forget this. Phone. There you go. It's actually part of Microsoft Phone Controls. There it is. Wasn't that hard? That was really hard. You had to come down to a perf demo to see how to do that, right? All right. I'm going to deploy. It'll look exactly the same. So the basic long list selector, and that's actually part of the point of this demo, is because we don't see this that much. The basic long list selector is exactly the same as the list box from the point of view of functionality. You just want a basic list box, you can still use long list selector. In fact, if you go to the toolbox, you know, the Visual Studio toolbox, I don't know how people use that in the designer, there is no list box control anymore in there. The little list box icon, when you drag that down, it'll bring you down a long list selector. Okay, I can see people checking, that's great. So let's see what this looks like. So I start off with my, like, not that great flick, right? I don't see any blanking. Let's go a little faster. How about a bit faster? How about even more faster? How about really fast? How about so fast that I can like hit the buttons and I can't really see what's going on? Come on, blank, blank, blank. This was like my crowning achievement for this version. And it goes both ways. Look at that. List box has a problem going down. One line change. That's it. It is as simple as that. So if you're targeting a Windows Phone app, you definitely want to use the long list selector. Apart from all the functionality benefits, just the amount of time that it takes you to upgrade those list boxes to long list selectors is 100% worth it. All right, moving along. Trivia. The guy who started this meme works for Windows Phone Marketing now. I don't know if that means we'll see some really cool Windows Phone memes or something, but I think it's pretty neat. Memory. So previously, pain points on the phone were generally centered around frame rates. Some people ran into some fill rate issues. I forgot to change the image. That's Windows 8. We're based on the same core, so it's the same memory issues on there as well. It was centralized around, you know, input responsiveness, and we've done a lot to address those issues, right? We just saw that, right? We saw the upgrade, we saw the change along the selector. These very basic things that just kind of work out of the box, which is essentially what you should expect, right? That's what should happen, and that's what we now have. So now memory becomes a little bit of a bigger issue. Biggest red flag to notice is that memory limits are now 100% enforced. You go over your limit, you're dead. That was on purpose. Previously, you had the 90 megabyte limit. It was kind of a soft limit. We said we tested it, but in reality, no one ever saw that it was tested. And then these low-powered devices came out with, throw me a version of a low-powered device. Lumia 660? 610. So for example, the Lumia 610, which is an amazing device. It sells awesomely. You want to get your apps running on these devices because these are the cheap devices that people are buying. But it only has 256 megabytes of memory, which means that when you hit the 90 megabyte limit, there really isn't much leg room there. But we still didn't kill you. So what we would do is we would test it on these low-end devices during ingestion into the marketplace. And if you failed, if it crashed, then we would fail you. And then you could say, oh, I don't want to run on that device, which is really not what you want to do. I've seen, like, ever since those devices went on sale, I see, like, a massive skew towards the cheaper devices in terms of downloads on my apps. You don't do that, you're cutting out a massive chunk of your market. Now we enforce those limits. The reason we enforce those limits is very simply because now we have a lot more services that you as a developer can write to run on the device. For example, Skype. Skype can now sit there in the background running, waiting for a phone call. It doesn't really consume memory, but we need to say, hey, when a Skype call comes in, what's the user's expectation? When a Skype call comes in, what should happen? It rings. Exactly, it rings. Like Skype actually, boom, pops open, we get the thing, we answer the phone call, and Skype goes and we can talk, right? But if I haven't left you enough buffer in my app, Skype can't run. So then I need to kill something. But the user's expectation is that the app does not get killed, right? So the user has two expectations. Phone call comes in, app keeps running, I can do my phone call even though it's through VoIP. So we need to keep those buffers there. And so we need to really enforce the fact, that if you're at a certain memory limit based on your app, you stick within that limit. Something to notice. Now, there is a gotcha. If you're under the debugger, the limit is not enforced so that you can debug, also because the debugger has more memory. So you always need to remember, and a lot of you do not know how many people forget to do this. When you change your release type to release, your build type to release, and you press that F6 to get the zap that you submit to the marketplace, and you just test it on the device to see that it kind of deploys, that's not enough. Check the device. Check the app while it's running in release. Have a little memory counter that just runs even under release as a little debug flag. You need to ensure that you don't hit those limits or you will be killed. Why am I harping on about it so much? Because it's really important, essentially. XNA and SLXNA games, or apps even, apps that use like full SLXNA interop. And we're not talking about people that use, let's say, the media library APIs from XNA from within their app. We're talking about proper SLXNA. They have set limits. I mentioned this here because I didn't notice it in the documentation. 150, you have an opt-in to 180, but again, you might be cutting out part of your market. And that's regardless of the device specs. So you're going to get 150 megabytes regardless of whether or not you're running on the high-end 920 or if you're running on, let's say, the Lumia 820, which has a slightly less, lower screen resolution, so it consumes less memory, or if you're on an even cheaper device. You want to find the memory table that applies to you. They're all kind of on MSDN, and I can send around. I can update the slides later on with the exact links. They were kind of still being published last night, so I couldn't find them, like the final kind of permanent links. And we mentioned this already. You're exempt from the limit when you're under the debugger. Excuse me. I woke up with a cough today. It's really annoying. Different memory usage at different. It's really important. Don't forget this. Sorry. I've lost some text, the editing guys. Okay, so we have, luckily I know my slides, different memory usage at different resolutions. So different screen, different, and you can actually test your devices if you're interested under settings, about. So settings, all the way down at the bottom, there's an about, and it says what the resolution is of a screen. So we have WXJ, WVGA, et cetera, et cetera. Bigger screen, bigger textures, more memory. Makes sense, right? Something to think about. Image decoding, we spoke about this already, but again, I'm just going to harp on about this. If you are downloading very large images and sticking them down into a very small image, let's say on a page, let's say you have a profile page, and you're downloading someone's photo, and you're downloading the highest resolution that is available on Flickr, and you're sticking it into your little 50 by 50 box, either don't, i.e. download the lower resolution one that's formatted for mobile anyway, or use the decode pixel width and decode pixel height to make sure that that gets squeezed down. Panorama. One of the biggest complaints about Panorama is it uses a lot of memory. Does anybody know why it uses a lot of memory? Out of curiosity? It's not the... Oh, yes. I don't know who said that. Someone over here. Excellent. The background image. So the Panorama has a wraparound, right? So it has this background image that kind of wraps around. And to get that wraparound in previous versions, we had to actually have a separate copy of the image and kind of stick it on the other side. Now we have these new controls internally which allow us to kind of mirror the end. And we only use one copy of the image. So your panorama immediately uses an empty panorama with an image, now uses half the memory. You might not see that on your high-end devices because you have these you have these high resolution screens, but take a 7.5 project with a panorama and an image, upgrade it, and you'll see the memory just drop. This one's a hard one because there's no impact. You cannot control this at all. So as you know, we keep harping on about this, and it's kind of cool, I guess. We now share a core with Windows, which means we have a 100% modern operating system running underneath us. It's not full Windows 8. No one try to get their Windows Store apps running on from within our marketplace. That'll happen if you rewrite them. And there are multiple sessions on that. But at the end of the day, the very core, the kernel at the bottom, is exactly the same. So we now support really cool things like multi-core just out of the box, and we support things like paging. And essentially paging, for those of you who are not up to date on paging, basically means when we see bits and pieces in memory that haven't been used for a while and don't look like they're going to be used, the kernel says, I'm going to free up physical memory and I'm going to stick that down onto the internal storage, which is slower than memory. And then when I need them, I'm going to page them back in. I'm going to fault them back in. And that's slow. So if you have a very large chunk of memory that is being paged out to disk, when you need that, the user is going to see the system visually freeze, because the system is kind of in a halt until it manages to read all that stuff back off the disk. So if you have a very memory-intensive app, and again, this is specific to some very specific use cases, but if you have a very memory-intensive app and you're jumping out to system tasks and you're jumping out to like Internet Explorer and a photo chooser and you're doing all sorts of things, or you have like all this memory kept in a background page that is only every now and then used, something to think about is that maybe it's not the best way of doing it, just because when they transition between those two apps that need these two big chunks of memory, the user's going to see that jarring transition just as the system halts trying to bring in that memory as quickly as possible. I can't not have a performance talk, especially to mention XAML, and not talk about these two guys. We're not going to run through it too deeply. There's a link to my other previous talks that focus more on a pre-Windows Phone 8, pre-Windows Phone 8 operating system, but things basically apply exactly the same. There are these two counters that every XAML developer must know and must use at some point during their development. Enable frame rate counters is that little brings up the frame rate counter on the side of the device, which you now see by default when you're debugging. So every app by default, when you press F5, it pops up. And redraw regions will tint new areas on the device that are being redrawn. So as an area gets redrawn, it will be retinted. Why is that useful? Often you don't even know that you're redrawing something. So you'll be sitting there in front of an app that's not moving, it's not doing anything, and you're looking at the frame rate counter, and the frame rate counter is moving. And you're like, huh, why is the frame rate counter moving if I'm just like sitting here reading like an article? You turn on redraw regions, and you notice that this little static image up the top that you thought was static is actually like reloading. It's moving because you've got some animation on it that you forgot to turn off. But the user doesn't really see it. And you don't see it until you turn that on. It's sucking up resources. And again, I have full-featured demos that run through an app and examples in my previous talks. I'd go check it out if that's something that you feel like you're running into. Moving right along. This one is probably the most exciting project from my perspective. Most of my apps that I will write from now on will most likely utilize some of this. Not necessarily for the D3D capabilities that I can stick in with the hybrid stuff, but just for the pure purpose of using WinRT to leverage a native component that I've written in a platform-agnostic way somewhere else, and leverage that on my Windows Phone app and not have to just rewrite it constantly. So the number one thing from my perspective, although we don't see it that much, but we haven't seen that many examples of this yet, but I think we will, is you need to consider the workloads. You need to find the workload that works right for you. And there will be blog posts about this, kind of breaking it down into itty-bitty components and with samples. But what's better? 1,000 calls across the boundary between .NET and C++, or one big call that batches it up? And if you can't do that, should you re-architect, or should you not? How about the data that you're passing across, the serialization that goes on there in the background without you having to do anything? Something to consider, things to think about. If you are writing this kind of app and you are doing, let's say, heavy compilation on the background and you're posting backwards and forwards constantly, it's definitely something to keep in the back of the mind that this is not 100% free. It is 100% optimized. It is the most optimized barrier traversal that I've ever seen, which is amazing. And it's like, a lot of work went into it from the CLR people and the Windows guys. But it's still something to consider. If you're traversing that boundary enough times, it will slow you down.
One other thing. I got asked this yesterday, and actually, it's actually a very good question. Should you rewrite your stuff in native? No. Maybe. Sometimes. If your stuff is really slow, yes. I have something that does, it takes like JPEG, it takes captures from the video sync and it encodes them into JPEG, and that is really, really slow in managed code. I have like a custom JPEG encoder so that it can kind of stream them across the wire, and it's really slow. That, I'm going to rewrite in native. Actually, I'm not going to rewrite. I'm just going to grab a free, you know, one of the free encoders and use those. But for a lot of workloads that we actually did this, we actually said, hey, what happens if I do some pure mathematics, right? That should be faster in native, right? Bring it over, and the difference is minuscule. It's something the user does not even notice. So you've done all this work for no reason. So make sure to evaluate and that you're actually solving a problem that exists as opposed to just generating work for yourself for really no reason. Also, if you want cross-compat, that's a valid reason, by the way. Like if you say, hey, I want to write this so that it can work across, you know, Windows Phone, Windows, and all these other systems, then yeah, that's also a valid reason. Drawing surface and DSBG, drawing surface background grid. We will see a demo of this in a minute. Essentially, we have two new controls in the XAML world which say these are surfaces that a native host can draw to, i.e. D3D. Drawing surface is meant for controls. So you want to create a purely native button. You hate our button. You feel that our button should be re-implemented in native, and it's a small control that's going to be duplicated around the screen. That is what drawing surface is for. Drawing surface is great for these kinds of little controls, not great for full screen. It creates an extra texture that we need to use, like an intermediary texture, and it slows things down, which, again, we'll see that in the demo in a minute. So you say to me, oh, but I want full screen because I want to write a game, but I want to have XAML controls on top or stuff like that. So what do we use? DSBG. Drawing surface background grid is a full screen grid, and you can draw to it, and you can basically get close to the 60 frames a second that you would get from, let's say, a pure native app if you've written it correctly. We will get to the demo later. 100% native apps. These are the D3D apps. Why I say they're D3D is because at the end of the day, if you want any kind of UI, you're going to be drawing it with D3D. Whereas in the previous one, the native component doesn't really have to draw D3D at all. It doesn't have to do any drawing. We have some really sweet resolutions. That doesn't mean that you have to use the full thing, though. It doesn't mean that the user can tell the difference if you're at full resolution or scaled down by 75%. Why is this important? Because the full resolution means you're pushing more pixels, you have to calculate more pixels, the GPU has to work harder, you're using more memory, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Go to the D3D talks, you'll find out even more information about why that is. And for what benefit at the end? None. It's a small screen anyway. I mean, I love this screen, it's massive, but at the end of the day, it doesn't compare. On this one, yeah, I'll notice if you're doing scaling. But on this one, I won't. And this is one of the biggest screens that's out there. This is a little tidbit for those doing real D3D development. All of our samples say, hey, initialize D3D, give me the highest D3D level you can get, right? Because that's generally good practice, because that means that in the future when we upgrade to the, you know, to new levels, you get that kind of automatically and stuff like that. The problem is that the emulator supports a higher version. The emulator basically piggybacks off your own system using kind of a software driver, and it will report a higher level. So if you develop your app 100% in the emulator, and that's obviously not a problem for the people here in the audience because they've all got devices, so we should all be testing on devices because testing on devices is real, and the emulator is great for very quick development, and I can keep going about this for a while, but you want to use the phone. But if you're not, if you've done a lot of development in the emulator and then you go to the phone and you're getting either weird artifacts or you're actually getting things that completely die, this is most likely why. We're trying to get the samples updated, but obviously the samples that are there right now do not. So you can actually just hard code that in saying, hey, give me D3D 9, level 3, and you'll be safe. All right, Marble Maze. So I love this game. If you guys have probably seen this way back in build last year. I think it was released for the Windows platform. This is a screenshot of it actually running on the phone. And it is actually a sample. The sample is, the URL is right down the bottom of the screen. You can grab it later on. And essentially what the sample looks like
is, this is the one, is that. That's all the XAML. That's it. Actually, there's one extra line here that usually you don't need, and it's because I'm going to show you what drawing surface looks like as well. This sample has a lot of hidden features which are not necessarily documented or you're not necessarily going to find, so we're going to walk through those so you can see visually what the issues are, and then we're going to run through like a real issue and we'll see that. But essentially, I have a DSBG. Remember, DSBG is for full screen. And drawing surface, although here it will be full screen because it's just the way it's written in the XAML, but in general we should only use it for the little screen and we'll see why. I'm going to switch to the device, I'm going to do the deployment. Oh, emulator. I'm sorry. Again, we don't use the emulator, especially not for performance. Emulator is awesome, don't get me wrong. The Hyper-V stuff is, like, the fact that it's based off Hyper-V means it generally boots faster, it restores faster, it interacts beautifully. If you have a touch screen, the multi-touch is amazing. But at the end of the day, for performance, it doesn't mean anything. It's using your machine. And your machine, no matter how good phones get, at least in the near future, your machine trumps them easily. And it's just building. It's going to come along. If I don't get this up, I'm just going to build the one from in here. I have one preloaded. Here we go. So here's my game. It's very simple. I'm going to lift it up so that I can kind of move it around. But essentially, I start my game, and you guys all know this one. Like, it's you know, the ball kind of moves around. You have a timer. You go in. You try and avoid those holes. And, of course, I never avoid the holes. Now, here are a couple of hidden features in the app. First of all, if you tap down the bottom, you get a little frame rate counter at the top. Now, this is not built in. Right? This is not like a built-in counter that you can just say, hey, here's the flag, it goes. But you can grab this source code and stick it into your app and just adapt it for the way your app is built so that you get the same kind of frame rate counter functionality. And it's really useful sometimes to make a change, deploy, play the game, and see, that dropped like 10 frames a second. That was probably not the best thing to do. So that's number one. And you can see that I'm running at 56 frames a second. So I'm running pretty much full. And we have, there's a lot of background things going on in this game that you generally wouldn't want to, that would allow you to kind of get to the full 60. But it looks pretty good. It looks nice. But what I can do now is I can actually go through and I can change it to drawing surface. Now, did you notice immediately the number that dropped? I don't know if you guys can see this on the big screen. But the number has dropped down to 37. And I'm not even moving. So we're updating the screen now nearly, we've lost like about 40% of our frames just by moving to DS. And if I go back, bang, it goes up. I'm now at 53. I'm going to move around. I'm at 54. And it'll move around 53, 54, depending on what's up, 56, 57. So that's just to show you the difference and why, like, you want to use one or you don't want to use the other. And one other thing to notice is also the screen resolution. So if I go to DS, which is at the lower end, and then I tap down here, if I tap up here, we're going to start changing the resolutions. Now, it's really hard to see on the Wolf Vision. But even at this resolution, which is like at a quarter screen, I think, the game looks pretty good. I'm not saying you should use this resolution. It is kind of low. I would use slightly higher. I definitely wouldn't go as low as this. I'm sure you guys can see that. And if it looks way better on my screen. If anyone wants to come around and look from here, you can come see it later on my device that's running, or you can go download the sample yourselves and muck around with it yourselves. This is kind of to get you guys interested and see that this exists, and you should check it out. And you can keep cycling through just to see the differences. That's kind of full screen. It looks really beautiful. But then when I drop it down like half, 50%, you don't really notice any difference. And you get that extra performance buffer. That's extra time for you to do your AI. It's extra time for you to do whatever you want, basically. Extra rendering CPU time is what I meant. All right. This is the fun part. And ironically, again, we have like 11 minutes left. I might go over a couple of minutes. That was a threat, just in case anyone was not sure. The idea in the next section, and if we don't get through everything, at least you guys can run through the points very quickly and at least go look at them later, is for you to get the tools that you can use to debug your own issues. So the very basic tool is the Visual Studio Profiler. It's the one that works in XAML. It has been extended. It has been grown out here to use... to support what's called real-world profiling. So it's essentially the same thing that we had in 7.5 extended out to have stuff like network, battery, app responsiveness, monitoring. It's not bad, actually. So if I load a project, so I'm going to load the Reddit app again that we had, but I'm going to load a clean version. So this is back to the 7.5 one that actually has issues, and we're going to see if it catches it. Not going to fully debug these things, but at least just to get a very quick feel for what it looks like. So it's over here in the debug menu. It is, of course, not the start performance analysis or start performance analysis pause. No one would ever think that that was the button that we're going to talk about. Of course, it doesn't make any sense in those names. I don't know why people get confused. What you really are looking for is the start Windows Phone application analysis, which is right down here. So again, not these ones. They don't make any sense. You definitely want this one. And you'll notice the default right now is already on app analysis. I don't know if you guys can see this. Let's just zoom in here a bit. So this is kind of the very basic version that you want. And we're going to just do start session. And basically what it does is it's going to load the app on the device. It's going to deploy it to the device. It's going to run it. It's going to take a log in the background. And the log is a combination of standard logging and logging that it kind of gets directly from within XAML. And then it's going to come out with pretty graphs, pretty colors. We're going to run through it very quickly while it deploys. It goes. We have our app. The old logo. I'm going to move around. You guys all remember this one. This is the one that's kind of broken. I should never feel that I have to go that hard that it actually moves the device. I'm going to exit. I'm not even going to let it finish loading. It's no point. I'm going to go switch back to here. It copies the log back. It's going to parse the log. It's going to get the pretty graphs. It kind of takes a little while to get it done. We're going to analyze, and we basically get this summary which says, okay, startup time looked okay. It wasn't that bad. The panorama did jump up kind of good. App responsiveness is really bad. Now, it also has some really cool things where it counts like how much data I uploaded, how much I downloaded. It's not really 100% accurate. The reason that it's so low here is because I'm getting a lot of cache data because we just loaded it a minute ago. But I can then go into the alerts, and I can run through, and I can say, you know, app responsiveness is poor between 2.695, so that's kind of here-ish, to 3.6. So I can highlight this area, and then it'll filter out to there, and it'll say, texture memory is dominant, so I'm allocating lots of textures, which is true because that's when I'm putting in all the images. And you can kind of break it down if you want. You can see what's the CPU usage, what's the little bits and pieces. You can see all the little flags here when I'm doing the little flick gestures, what the frame rate is. Again, you want to get to 60. Play around with it, muck around with it. If it helps you, awesome. If not, we have other avenues, and I would recommend checking out some of the previous talks. Moving on. I should probably stop doing that full screen. All right. Now what we're going to talk about is the new profiler. And this is the same profiler that's essentially available to you for Windows 8 app development. So it comes with the Express SKU. And if anybody's used profiling natively within Visual Studio, this will be very familiar to them. Essentially, we bring up our good old friend here, Hybrid Marble Maze. Now, this one is a slightly modified version. This one's actually, it has a slight modification to it that is based 100% on a customer problem. So we had a perf investigation where a customer said someone had early access to the SDK who said, hey, I've written this app. The app looks amazing. Visuals are beautiful. FPS sucks. It's like, wait a second, how can you have good visuals and things? So it's like, oh, no, the ray casting, all that sort of stuff. It just works. It's really cool. The GPU is amazing. It's just doing it really slow. And the cool thing here is that we could actually diagnose the problem kind of directly within the Visual Studio Profiler. So if I go here again, and it's exactly the same place, of course, you would never think that it was one of these two. It's definitely one of this one. And you'll notice that the screen is a little different, so we have less options for the native slash combined hybrid or pure native options. Basically, just execution. And I can click Start Session. And it's going to do exactly the same rigmarole. It's a little bit of a different UI. Did I click it? Yeah, I did. $10 says this is where the demos start failing, and then I have to go through the logs that I did last night, and then it looks like I'm faking it. Here we go. Deploying. I'll switch to the device. There's nothing extra different. You will notice it's a little slower under Profiler. Not much. If I bring up the frame rate counter, you can see it's a little slower because it's kind of connected to the device. But it's still, the main difference here is it's running at 33 frames a second. I didn't show this because of time, but that is actually because of the performance problem. Now, my initial thought when I saw this was, oh,
They're using the drawing surface, right? It's the obvious one.
So I move them and I double check their score score to no. When I do drawing surface, it drops another 5 frames per second. So we're now at like 29, 30, where we used to be at 35. So I'm going to exit. That's probably enough of a profiling session for there. Probably enough data. And the data is going to come up. It's going to come up. Again, this is 100% the standard Visual Studio UI that you guys are used to from desktop development, from Windows Store style app development. That doesn't sound right. But it's essentially the same thing. You get a very basic kind of Outlook graph of CPU for your entire process. And you can do, like, this is definitely UI to explore. This is kind of your first line of defense against performance problems. And you want to, like, you can select and you can say, hey, like, there isn't one here, but, like, oh, look, there's a little spike here. Like, I really want to see just what's in there, and I could filter just down to there. And you have this hot path, which basically is Visual Studio's guess at, like, where is all the time being spent. And to me, this kind of makes sense, actually. So taskhost.exe, I'm just going to zoom in here. Taskhost.exe is the app container for all XAML apps, so even if they're hybrid mix mode, they're going to stick in there. MP control is part of XAML, right? It's the DLL that kind of kicks things off. And then D3D background content provider prepared resources is going to be my code. I have symbols for it. Actually, symbols for these will be published at some point soon in the future, so you'll actually be able to see like a little bit of the workings, the inner workings of XAML as well, just to give you a hand. So I can actually click on here, and I could have gotten through here as well, through function details or through call tree, etc. But I can go through, and it says, okay, prepare resources. Isn't really helping me much, but I can go through and I can see, okay, well, I'm here right now, and this is taking up 43.8% of the time. And of that 43.8%, only 0.1 is spent in the actual function, so this is not my problem. This function is causing work to happen, but is not the worker itself. So where is the work done? Oh, well, 43.7% is spent in update. And that makes sense. That's my game loop, essentially, and that's the thing that's updating every frame. So I can click through to update. And I can say, okay, well, here it is. You know, we can go through and we can say, okay, well, we have the same thing. You know, update checkpoints is the one, so I can keep running through. And I can go through and I can keep running. Blah, blah, blah. And you can keep running through until you find what you think is really the slow point here. So according to this, it's collisions. I don't really believe that. I'm going to go out into the call tree, which is actually my favorite view here, where you basically get everything drilled down to your app. And I can say, okay, well, open it up. And first thing people see when they say this is, no, thank you. Whoa, what are you showing me? It's actually not that complex. Essentially, what it's saying here is we have inclusive, we have exclusive, and we have the percentage representations of those numbers.
Excuse me.
Inclusive means every single time the profiler broke into my process and took a snapshot of the stack, how often was this function part of the stack? So how often was it somewhere in that stack causing work? So for example, MP control was 93.54% of the time when I broke in, it was in the stack. Now how much work did it actually do? Well, it only did the exclusive. Exclusive means it was the bottom of the stack, or the top of the stack, really. If you look at it reverse, I'm looking at a tree view here, so it's the bottom. How many times was MP control the one actually doing work? Well, it was only 0.15%, but it was causing 93.54% of the work. So if I break it open, I can keep going. And I can say, okay, well, prepare resources. That kind of makes sense, but let's see what's actually going on here. So that's 43.8 and another 37.49 in there. And I go through and I find, Marble Maze updates. That's, again, we found that before. And I'm going to run through. And I have these three main things up here that are causing work to happen. So the first one is my physics simulation. And that makes sense, right? Collision detection is expensive. It's a known problem. It also makes sense because I know this app. Accelerometer get current reading. Hey, I skipped over something, so there's a hint as to where the problem is. But get current reading, that's going to be a little bit expensive. I don't know if it should really be 10% expensive, but it's going to be a little expensive. Why is it going to be a little expensive? Because it's going to go out to the accelerometer, it's got to get the current reading, it's got to convert it back, and it's got to give it to me. But why is get default taking 10% of my time? So get default, all it does is gets a reference to the accelerometer. That's it. Anybody got an idea? There is a clue there, actually. Anybody got an idea why that might be heavy? I'm not saying should be, but why it is.
Yes, it's being happened every time. But why is that heavy? So there's a little hint. The hint is that it's a function and not a property. And a function kind of says, hey, I'm actually going to be doing some work here, so it's going to be a little heavy. So you're essentially correct. I'm getting the accelerometer every single time. Now, it's 11:15, so if you guys have to get to like a different session, I would recommend that you jump out now. I will be finished in about 3 minutes. If I jump out here really quickly, and I'm going to run, and this is actually fixed in the actual sample, accelerometer is a member variable. Sorry, it's not a member variable. It's a local variable to the function. If I was to split that back out into a member variable and only do it once, and this makes sense, but it's not something that you see without the profiler telling you it's actually slow. When I split that out like it is in the sample, and you guys can go see that, it will just work. So essentially, I'm not going to run through the whole thing, but essentially it's just copying it out to here, sticking it in the header file, giving it like, you know, renaming it to member. Sorry, I forgot the type. And don't forget your Hungarian notation, kind of. And that's it. Like, that would solve the problem, essentially. So the profiler pinpoints specifically where your time is being spent so that you can go through and say, that makes sense, that makes sense, that doesn't make sense. I need to either get rid of it, like I just did, like I did in this one, or I need to optimize that one. I need to see this function. It's like, it should not take this long to calculate the distance between 2 points. Let's rewrite the algorithm. And that's what the profiler gives you. So really quickly, it's going to run through the last couple of points. You want to use the tools that we actually use. You can actually go deeper down the rabbit hole. So every time you go through and you create one of these logs is kind of added to your project. Now, if you go into folder, into File Explorer, and you actually open up your property, you get perf logs, you get all these ones. And the one that we just ran now is this one. And I get these two things. I get like these PDBs, whatever, and a VSPX file. Now, we're all smart people, and we know that VSPX is really a zip file, like most formats today. And if I break it in, we actually have an ETL file. Now, an ETL file, for those of you who haven't used Windows profiling before, is a very generic container for event tracing for Windows. And we have full support for event tracing for Windows. You can actually take that ETL, double-click on it, and open up in WPA or in XPerf. WPA is the new XPerf, Windows Performance Analyzer. And the people, when people see this after they see the first one, they're like, dude, you're like, no. How many graphs can I like take? But if you want really low level, you want to really break down what is going on in your app, this is the way to do it. You want to see, like, okay, I want utilization by process. I want utilization by thread. Bang. Here are all my threads. Bang. Look how many threads I've got. Did you know that get accelerometer, get default, spins up a new thread every single time? And that's why it was so slow. You do it once, you don't run into these issues. Something to think about, we'll have a lot of blog posts. It'd be nice to have like a one-day perf session where I could really like just spend time talking about all these things. I'd probably start off with a full room, end up with one person in the end. Find the things that you want. Find the things that are kind of important and work for you and run with those ones. We have ETW for Windows Phone now. You can write your own ETW events, collect performance logs within your game, within your XAML app, within your hybrid app, and you can see those on the reports. It's awesome. I'm so excited about it because I did my feature. But I can't talk about it, so no time. Definitely something to check out if you're interested in that kind of thing, like actually logging and not fake logging to isolated storage, but high-performance kernel logging at the same time. You want to grab the power tools from Windows Phone Tools. They've been updated to work with Windows Phone 8. They give you like a bunch of extra debugging bits and pieces that Visual Studio does not give you. We don't have time for Q&A exactly, but I will be at the Windows Phone booth for the next couple of hours at least. I'll be here talking. Feel free to come by. Feel free to say hello. Feel free to grab my email. Feel free to ask me questions about anything. Perf is great, but you know, people have all sorts of weird questions. How do I replace my Surface tablet? Dude, I don't even have a Surface tablet. I don't know. Let's focus on the phone. We have these awesome posters down here that one of the PMs on our team worked on. You definitely want to grab one of these, roll them up. They won't get smushed in your luggage. Run through every single API that you're ever going to need to develop on the phone. Stick it up in your office. You're always going to use it. I'm Oren Nachman. Thank you so much for sticking with me for the extra 4 minutes.